It's Cofield and Company, live from Victory Burger, inside the Circa Resort and Casino, on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go, Circa Las Vegas. Circa Sports. As we're hanging out at Victory Burger on the overhang, getting ready for a Thursday night football game. Greg Salerno is with us. Mateo with the setup. Lots to get to today. Very busy day in the world of sports, locally, nationally. There are some college football games we'll get to a little later with Brad Powers. We'll look ahead to the CFP, and obviously the NBA Cup is on the ground here. We got a big change with UNLV football as well. So Thursday, we're fired up to be on the scene here at Circa. So, rumor started yesterday that UNLV was engaged with a guy named Dan Mullen, who recently has been doing TV. I actually didn't even realize what he was doing with ESPN because we're usually on the air around the same time as they're doing Thursday night college football.
Yeah.
So he's been doing that. His background is pretty deep, 20-plus years. Two-time head coach at a very high level in the SEC at Mississippi State and at Florida. Sort of a resume near Barry Odom. Odom was blown out at Missouri, was around 500 there. Dan Mullen had success at Florida, and it all kind of unraveled in the fourth year. But at Mississippi State, he had a lot of success. And as I said before, I don't know how Mississippi State wins in football aside from being an SEC school, because I don't know how you recruit.
Sure.
But he did it, and he's a guy with a 103 and 61 record as a head coach, and that's all SEC. And I don't think most people knew that this was even a possibility, because this is happening fast. Sunday morning, Odom's gone. And then you're like, wait, what the hell's going on here? So Dan Mullen is a hell of a land. We'll tell you throughout the show about him. And in terms of sizzle, he's got a high sizzle rating. He's done TV. He's kind of a wacky guy at times, but he's high energy. He can recruit. So UNLV, I think a lot of people were worried that, like, hey, Odom goes. Everything's going to, you know, the momentum's done. Everything's going to die. And I will tell you, I don't, you know, sit here and, I guess I do, pat myself on the back often. I consistently sent out the message that they'll be fine. They got a bigger budget now. They're going to be in the mix for former head coaches. And because of what Barry Odom did, it puts them at that level where they're more attractive now than they've ever been in the history of the program.
I guess that's my first question for you is, what is unique about Odom? Because obviously something's unique about him, because they've been trying to win for, you know, their whole entire existence, and they haven't been able to. Then all of a sudden this guy comes in and they're one of the better teams in the country. I mean, what is it unique about Odom?
So I think, first of all, former head coach is a big deal. And he was at Mizzou for 5 years, then moved on to be a DC at Arkansas. I think when you lose a head coaching job, you step back, even if you're working in the lesser role, which, by the way, he was making the same money as a DC at Arkansas that he got here at UNLV. So it was actually a lateral move salary-wise for him, but he knew he needed to prove his chops, prove his wares as a head coach. Really, a lot of what I saw was just an attitude. There's always been a culture issue at UNLV, like the gritty underdog. And he's like, look at this team. I have some building blocks here. The other thing is, I think he's one of the best portal coaches in the country. He absolutely embraces the portal. And then his assistant staff was – a bunch of brilliant hires, a lot of guys that he knew, and he delegates. I've never seen a head coach delegate like Odom did, so it all came together. They were pretty good in game. They won a lot of close games. It's funny. I know people hate the word culture, but you can be around people and you're like, this ain't going to work. This is not a winning formula, right? You could be at a radio group and you're like, this ain't the big time.
Right.
And I've been at places where, like, this sucks, right? Lotus Broadcasting is awesome. But it really was, it all sounds simple, but you got to do it. But go get the players, and there's never a panic. There's a confidence. The players, I think, adopt the culture, like, we're going to win. So that's why it worked. And, you know, it's funny, a lot of people, Greg, with the athletic director, Eric Harper, he's a little bit different than your traditional AD, which I like, because a lot of ADs are stuffed shirts and can't speak publicly.
Yeah.
Which blows me away. Eric Harper can be a little rough around the edges, but he speaks honestly, and people were like, oh, you know, I have no confidence. Like, he hired Odom. He's the one who hired Odom. He's right. Freaking slam dunk. Can you let him get their work done? The management group at UNLV, he's going to come up with something. I kept telling people, I'm like, they're going to be fine. And now most fans are pretty giddy. The only negative is he signs a 5-year deal. There's probably a good buyout in there. If he has 3 good years, he might do the same thing Odom does. But guess what? This is the world of Group of Five. Unless right. you got $7 million to pay a head coach, $5 million, $6 million to compete with the SEC, the Big Ten, the Big 12, the ACC, then you're going to run into those problems. And now your job is, as an AD, you got to always have a list of the next person. You got to always be networking, and you're probably going to have to hit home run every 3 years. It's tough.
Isn't it kind of funny, though, how we've been killing players, or people do, not us necessarily, but people in general, kill players for the NIL, and we've had a situation here that they've been killing players in Vegas, and then it's totally cool when coaches go leave for more money and do the same thing.
It is funny. I've been railing against it for years. Listen, I work around the UNLV football program. This won't help them, but every player in the program, until they sit down with the new coach, Dan Mullen, which I think is going to happen sooner than later. It's a very weird time right now.
Sure.
But until they know they have a spot on the team, Dan Mullen could come in and go, 16 guys are like, everyone else get out.
Right.
Like the players have a right to protect themselves as well, but fans are just stuck in this, like, kids these days, college football sucks.
I know.
Like, the kids have a right to protect themselves just like the coaches do. If you get a great offer and you want to take it and your family is a match for that market, maybe over this market, and you can move on, then the kids should be able to move on.
It's funny. It's the same people that hate the free agency and the NBA or NFL or whatever. It's like, dude, what? The coaches do it all the time. I mean, it's crazy to me. And also, I guess another question to me would be, because people, I've heard people are already complaining about recruitment. He was great at recruitment. Isn't the NIL transactional? I mean, so is Mullen going to have the same exact advantage or disadvantage or whatever?
Odom was actually not very into the NIL. I don't think he wanted to set a standard where this was pay for play. So most of his team was, you come here, you achieve, and then there's probably NIL coming. Like from the team 2 years ago, the players who excelled got rewarded. Players who excel in season may get, you know, some more NIL money along the way. They had a baseline NIL. Everyone got that. And then, you know, safe to assume like Ricky White got a lot more. Jesus probably got a reward. Jackson Woodard. These are the best players on the team. And honestly, it's actually the way some of the big-time programs do it. Like Oregon, money is doled out through the season. So you got to do your work, right? You got to work every week. You got to achieve. It's just like the real world. Like,
right.
You don't just get a contract up front and then you don't achieve or you're sneaking around looking to leave for the next stop. So
sure.
It is a very interesting time. We'll get into Dan Mullen a little more. I just wanted to ask you real quick. The NBA Cup is coming. You don't care?
Well,
you're a big NBA guy.
I am a big NBA guy. And then last year they were like hyping this thing up and LeBron wins it. And all of a sudden it doesn't mean anything anymore. So then I'm like, oh, okay, I guess it doesn't mean anything. I guess I don't have to watch it. What's the point? It means nothing, right? That's all I've seen is every single post saying it doesn't mean anything.
Well,
who cares?
I think those are fans.
I mean, you know.
I think those are people hyped up for the big brands in the NBA. But they do have the – I'll get you the ticket prices. The NBA and the venue realize what's happened here.
Right.
Like a lot of the big dogs, the big names, didn't make it. So they're actually – they've got pretty affordable tickets available, which is smart.
It is great for Vegas. I mean, if you don't have an NBA team, obviously, and I would love to have one because it's – well, NFL, NBA, probably my two favorite sports, so I would love to have an NBA team. And it is something that people should go watch, but I just think it's funny. It's like they cheapened it themselves, and now all of a sudden they want everybody to go watch. It's like, okay, I thought it didn't mean anything. And even players were killing it. Players were like, I don't care about that. I care about championship. Oh, okay. Well, how come now you want one? I thought the Cup sucked. You didn't care.
Coming up next, we're live at Circa Victory Burger. We're going to lean on one of the pals of the show, who is actually a Florida Gator guy, went to school there, a big SEC guy. Brian Edwards will fill us in on all little details about Dan Mullen and his past, what kind of offense he runs, what kind of defense, what happened at Florida. That's on the way.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
So a big day around Las Vegas. Cofield and Company covering the hiring of Dan Mullen, a former SEC coach, was in the Mountain West Conference with Utah as an OC, obviously as an Urban Meyer guy to a certain extent. Brian Edwards covers the Florida scene. He went to Florida. He is up at MajorWager.com, so we'll get in a couple of questions about this first round of the CFP. But we really want to get into Dan Mullen and get some information out there to the Vegas audience. So what do you think of the guy in terms of the job he did at both Mississippi State and Florida?
Well, I think what he did at Mississippi State was fantastic. In year one, he went 5-7, and he inherited a pretty rough situation. And then he took them to 8 straight bowl games. And it wasn't like he got, you know, a lucky Dak Prescott score and he was a 5-star. Now, Dak Prescott was a 3-star. And in the 2014 season, Dan Mullen had Mississippi State ranked number one in the country for a month until they lost at Alabama in a game where they did get me a backdoor cover with a touchdown in the last minute.
We always remember.
Yeah, we remember these things, don't we? And, you know, he had been, like you mentioned, he had the success with Meyer at Utah as OC with Alex Smith as QB, and then as OC at Florida in 06 and 08 before he went to Starkville. Florida won 2 national championships in 3 years, a lot of success with Tebow, obviously, and a year of Chris Leak. And so then he goes to Florida, who had gone 4-7 the year before under McElwain. McElwain got fired the day of the Florida-Georgia game, and he goes 10-3 in year one with Felipe Flippin Franks as his quarterback. And then the next year he went 11-2, and then the pandemic year in 2020, I thought that was actually his best team, but they lost 3 unbelievable one possession heartbreakers, and ended up going 8-4. It was the 10 game SEC only season, and he started taking a lot of flack from the fans because we lost that LSU regular season finale, which was really fluky. But I think he got sick of the AD Strickland, who I've been sick of, and he's still there at Florida, and I want him gone. But I think their relationship was souring, and there was a lot of pressure to fire Todd Grantham, who got hired yesterday by Gundy at Oklahoma State. And that was the mistake he made, not firing Grantham. And him and Strickland's relationship soured, and he was getting flack from the fans for his recruiting and not being in the top 5 with Saban and Kirby. And then the 2021 season happened, and he totally checked out about midway through the year, and that's what led to his dismissal.
Big results, and the expectations of Florida are just crazy. So let's talk some basics from his background. What kind of offense is he going to run? What kind of offense does he like to run?
A spread-like offense, you know, a lot of shotgun, a dual-threat quarterback, which obviously Dak was, which Tebow was, which Alex Smith was, even, you know, a little bit of Emory Jones and Anthony Richardson. So it's going to be a lot of shotgun. He likes to get the ball in his talent's hands quick. You know, not like a ton of wide receiver screens, but he likes to get the ball in the hands of his talent. And, I think he's probably refreshed. He's only 52. I think he's got a lot of good football left in him. I think he's one of the best offensive minds around at any level. And he's probably refreshed and ready to go. And I think it's a great hire by UNLV.
Do we have to worry about the defensive coordinator? How is he with the defense? And we're talking with Brian Edwards, expert on Florida football, SEC. He's up on hitmajorwager.com to go get his selections. What about his defense?
Yeah, so he kind of stays out of the way of his defensive guy, and that was okay. Grantham did a hell of a job at Mississippi State with him. They had some really good defenses, and the first 2 years at Florida, Florida's defense was lights out under Grantham, but it went sour in 2020, and then he made a big mistake not firing him going into 2021. A lot of stuff came out after the firing about, you know, a lot of the defensive players could not stand Grantham. They thought Grantham wasn't playing the better guys, like James Houston, who had some success as a rookie with the Lions. He wasn't being played and eventually transferred to Coach Prime at Jack State. But if he gets a good DC, it'll be good because he'll stay out of the guy's way and let him coach.
Brian Edwards with us. We're talking Dan Mullen to UNLV. All right, what do you think from the outside on the school and market selection for Dan Mullen?
You know, I was surprised that, you know, when you texted me Tuesday night, I don't even think I had seen anything about it yet. But hey, I mean, after living in Starkville and Gainesville, Vegas sounds like a very nice change of pace. So I guess I shouldn't be surprised. I mean, I've always thought about moving to Vegas. So I was a little surprised. And when we were texting a couple nights ago, you know, I mentioned I'd be worried about him looking for other jobs. But, I mean, I guess that's the reality of Group of Five. If your coach has a lot of success, he's probably going to be looking for another job. But that's kind of a double-edged sword. It's a good thing and a bad thing. It means he's having a lot of success with you. I think he's probably raring and ready to go. And he's a better recruiter than he gets credit for. Like I mentioned, the Dak Prescott fine. I don't think Jeffrey Simmons, longtime perennial Pro Bowler D tackle for the Titans, I don't think he was a five-star either, maybe a four-star. You know, he's a better recruiter than people give him credit for.
Well, UNLV has kind of resided, before Barry Odom, it resided in the two-star and three-star range, and Odom did it with a lot of three-stars and did a fabulous job with the portal. Barry Odom, and he told the story often that about 5 years ago, he's like, I hate this freaking portal, and he told the story, his wife's like, you got to change. You got to embrace this or else this ain't going to work. So Mullen was coaching last when the portal was kind of developing, right, you know, at 25 miles an hour. Now it's 1,000 miles an hour, and UNLV is a not a true portal program, but the way it's been built to this point, they've been turning over 50 players each year. How do you think he embraces the portal?
Well, he did a good job. Like you said, it was only the very beginning stages of the portal, but he did a really good job with the portal. He got Van Jefferson, who's still in the NFL, was a five-star to Ole Miss. He got him out of the portal. Jonathan Greenard, the pass rusher from Louisville, who's still a pretty good player in the league. He got him, and he would let us in sacks in that 2019 season, I believe it was. So he was already doing a good job in the portal. And so I'm sure he will embrace that and do a good job. And probably get a lot of guys from the South, too, to come out to Vegas.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Barry Odom really mined the Kansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, obviously Texas, transfers in from Arkansas. So I wonder, and a lot of this depends on the assistants you bring in too and where their connections are. UNLV was kind of developing into sort of at least three time zone recruiting situation. They actually got a commit from a kid from Buffalo, but I think he's going to flip to Purdue. So yeah, the portal is gigantic. They need to sell tickets here. They need to get hype with the program. They started to finally really get some momentum with the winning. So I like, that's where I like the match as well. I think Mullen is, Vegas people like pizzazz and they like national names. And because when Odom first came, they were like, who? I think most people know who Dan Mullen is. And if they don't, I think his first couple of impressions will be boffo off the charts.
Yeah, no, he had great enthusiasm for the Gators when he arrived. You know, as I've described, it kind of went south toward the end. But I think he's kind of, you know, because he would be standoffish with the media at times. But I think he's kind of rebranded himself in the television world. And I think he's been very good on television. I don't know what you think, Steve. But I think he's they will like his pizzazz. I mean, they like Lon Kruger because he won a lot of games. I mean, he's got a lot more pizzazz than Lon Kruger. I think he's got a lot more pizzazz than Barry Odom. And Barry Odom was spectacular at UNLV. But I think he's a better coach than Barry Odom as well. So, I mean, we'll see how that plays out. And, look, Barry Odom has earned a lot of respect for me in the last couple of years, what he's done out there. But I think Mullen's a better coach than him.
Dan Mullen to UNLV. Brian Edwards with us from MajorWager.com. He went to Florida. He's an SEC analyst for Southeastern 16. On the other story around his family, his wife is kind of interesting. She's out there. what do you think about that story? Like, I don't really know the story. I know there was a, hey, she's greeting the players coming off the bus. Was that the only thing, or was there other stuff to be concerned with?
No, not at all. I mean, now the rival fan bases will try to create that, and they'll do whatever they want on Twitter and wherever. And, you know, my FSU friends obviously would hit me up with a lot of funny stuff. Man, she's just a motherly-like figure, and she loves the players, and she does give them kisses right on the lips, like a mom does, but there's nothing sexual about it. And it's it will create some fodder for the rivals, but there's nothing to it.
And I know he does have a son, Cannon, who I think is a 2028 recruit who's a big basketball player. So a high level recruit. So we'll see how that works out. There's some good places to play basketball. So I'm guessing his family blends in well here. I think his personality blends in well here. So to me, it's a home run hire. And then to go back to your point, listen, this is the way Group of Five is now. The Mountain West, I don't. The Mountain West now does not have a coach beyond Air Force. They do not have a coach in the current Mountain West that has a tenure that's over 5 years. And so Chris, everyone's turning things over. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Chris Peterson was an anomaly. I mean, you don't find Chris Petersons anymore that'll stay at Boise State, you know, for more than a decade.
Spencer Danielson's making, because he was a young guy and got the job after being an interim, he's making $1.1 million. Like, that's never going to last. They're going to have to bump him to $3, $4, $5 million, or he's going bye-bye. Anyone who has success is probably going to look elsewhere because of the budget. And I don't think most Mountain West schools are ready to go $5, $6, $7 million a year on salary. So this is kind of the area they reside in until maybe there's some big changes in college football come 2031. So let's get to your other expertise, which is sports gambling. Is there anything in the playoff first round that stands out for you, either what you think could be an easy cover as a dog or one of the favorites where you're like, that line is too small, they are going to be in blowout central?
So I made Ohio State 7, so I think that's a good line. I made Penn State 8.5, so I think that's a good line. I made Notre Dame 8.5, so I think that's a good line. I only made Texas 7.5, so the only game I've bet is Clemson. Obviously, you know, we're whatever, what are we still, 9 or so days out. I would love for the market to push Notre Dame to double digits so I can take Indiana. Now, I readily concede that Indiana's just been an automatic play for me all year. You know, like I said, I got the line at 8.5, so I'm not saying I'll love Indiana, but if you get that number to 9.5, I'll buy it to 10 just because Indiana has been an ATM machine for me all year long, and I want to ride with them one more time. The only game that really stands out is I like Clemson. Now, as we get closer to kickoff, maybe I'll do a money line parlay with or a teaser with Penn State or you know, I'm not going to take Notre Dame. And I kind of lean Tennessee as if they're getting more than 7. But, yeah, we'll see. My lasting memory of Ohio State is just looking so god-awful against Michigan. And I think Tennessee's got the quarterback advantage there. Nico's been a little up and down, but I still think he's a lot better than Will Howard.
Look ahead lines came out. How do you read Indiana potentially against Georgia, only 6, Notre Dame against Georgia? Notre Dame's actually a favorite. They're handicapping this like Carson Beck's not playing.
They are, and I don't care if he plays or not. In fact, I'd rather have 100% Gunnar Stockton than an 80% Carson Beck against Notre Dame in New Orleans and Georgia as a 1.5-point underdog, which is what I see at FanDuel. I don't know what books you're – what are you seeing for Georgia-Notre Dame?
1.5.
Yeah, I mean, I would – Georgia would be one of my bigger bets of the year at plus 1.5 against Notre Dame, location advantage in New Orleans. And I don't care if – I'd rather it be a healthy Gunnar Stockton than a compromised Carson Beck. As for Georgia, I would probably be on Georgia minus 5.5, 6.5, or 7 or fewer. I'd be on Georgia against Indiana as well. One that stood out to me in the hypotheticals, I would be on Arizona State plus 13.5 against Texas. Yep. For sure.
Totally agree. I think Arizona State's getting dissed. I think it's a brand that's unfamiliar to people, and that's how too many bettors are judging this thing by brand. And to me, brand doesn't matter. You got to throw that out. This is the era of parity, and the top schools are coming down. Middle schools are moving up a little bit. Bottom schools are moving up. So I don't understand that big line. Brian, we are up against it. I totally appreciate you checking in on short notice. Go to majorwager.com and check out Brian up on Twitter at Vegas B. Edwards. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thanks, Steve. I enjoyed it. Appreciate it. Anytime. Have a good one.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Ooh, Merry Christmas.
Christmas comes this time each year.
Ooh, all right, big news in town. UNLV with the hiring of Dan Mullen. I don't even know if they've officially announced it, but everyone's running with it. We'll tell you, if we can, later in the show, when a press conference, an intro press conference, maybe, for Dan Mullen. Salerno, Cofield, Victory Burger, inside Circa. So with these coaching searches, it's always very interesting because UNLV is really quiet, Greg, about all the news. And sometimes, like the Odom news, the introduction or the naming of Odom took 10 days. So what happens is there's a void of info, salaried media, and that does mean something. When you have bosses and you have ethics to kind of live to.
Sure.
You can't just throw any name out there. Last time around, somehow people started running with Ed Orgeron was a candidate because some guy on Twitter said he was. And, like, literally outlets outside the city are like, Ed Orgeron. And then Ed Orgeron saw the report, and he's like, I haven't talked to UNLV. I have no interest. Like, what is this? So a lot of content creators can be a dangerous game. I saw you send over a story today that says, what about Shedeur Sanders?
That Dan Orlovsky, who was on supposedly Get Up on ESPN, says it's the worst-kept secret in the NFL circles that Shedeur wants to be a Raider.
Okay, interesting. I wonder what his source on that is, where he's getting his information. There's a guy at SI, New SI, which, again, is like Bleacher Report and Fansided, which is a fan report.
That's actually where I saw it.
There's a guy, Hondo, there.
Yeah, he used to work with us, right?
He did. He's a moron.
Dude, I seen the guy go nuts at a press conference.
Well, he's just he's not sourced. So here's what Adam Hill explained this yesterday, and it's not no shot, even though I called him a moron against Hondo. The basis of Raider Nation saying that Shedeur absolutely wants to play with the Raiders, and his dad does too. People keep sending out audio from a comment of Deion Sanders in July, saying, "Hey, the Raiders would be a good organization to go to." There's a little complication. They have been terrible. Who's coaching Shedeur? Do they want Antonio Pierce? And the bigger one is, this is what Adam explained yesterday, that a lot of people are running with the fact that every Sunday, Shedeur Sanders sends out a tweet that says something to the effect of, thank God. And people are like, the Raiders lost that day. He's fired up that they lost, and they're going to get the top pick.
Yeah.
And I was just looking back, 11-17, thank God. That's the day they lost to the Dolphins. He also sent out a thank God on the Raiders bye week. And then I guess the explanation on that was, well, other teams in the range of the number one pick, they lost.
They lost too, so it made it seem like.
I'm not saying he doesn't want to come here,
right?
But I don't believe this information to be that solid. And I'll tell you the other thing.
Yeah.
What if he does want to come here, but his demand and his dad's demand is Antonio Pierce needs to be the head coach next year?
Well, I mean, you have to get the first pick first. But, yeah, I guess. I mean, it depends on what you think about Shedeur. I mean, if I think if he's a game – like I would have last year just given the farm for a quarterback. If it was Jaden Daniels, whoever, I would have – I want a quarterback in the building, and then I'll worry about the rest later. That would be my philosophy, which was probably why I don't work there. But if I think Shedeur is going to change my franchise, it's going to be a franchise quarterback, hell yeah, bring whoever, dude. Have his buddy – I don't care. Have his limo driver be the coach. I mean, whatever. Just get a quarterback in the building.
You don't entirely mean that.
No, I don't.
I think it's more acceptable with – my rationale would be with Pierce. First of all, he didn't really get a fair shot this year. He's made a lot of mistakes with the kind of rabble-rousing team that he's coaching.
Sure.
They beat to hell. He didn't have a quarterback. So does he deserve a second year? Maybe. And if that is the way you get Shedeur Sanders. By the way, if they have the number one pick, doesn't mean that Shedeur and Deion have to come here. I don't mean Deion's literally coming here.
Sure.
But this is also this is an Eli Manning situation all over again, a John Elway situation all over again potentially. They have the power.
Yeah,
I can tell six teams at the top of the draft, no, you guys suck. I don't want to go there. We will not sign with you. Trade the pick.
But why would it be the Raiders? Like, I don't know what he sees. I want him to. I want the Raiders to be good. I live in Las Vegas. I just don't know what he's seeing where he's like, oh, man, I really got to play for that team. Like, I don't see what it is. But hope so, I guess.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Back here, I like it. A little Hawaii theme on the return for the holidays. Of course, during the football season, this is one of the great homes downtown of Hawaii football. You can actually watch all the Hawaii football games, which was never very easy in the past with their Spectrum Sports, but you can do it right here at Circa. All right, let's bring in Xavier Pope. Greg Salerno's here. EP's up with us on a Thursday. How are you, sir?
Pretty good. How you doing, Steve?
Very good. Very good. I say it every week. I'm very much enjoying your new home on Threads. There's a different vibe to it. It doesn't seem to be attacks and bickering, and most of that stuff was coming from people who are following you. Greg and I are very interested in seeing the Bills ownership piece sold to a bunch of former athletes. There's Carter in that group. What do you think of this?
Well, it's mixed thoughts, right, Steve? It's Trace McGrady, Vince Carter. This is the first time the Bills ever allowed a secondary ownership group in their team. But here's the thing. The NFL changes rules on private equity ownership up to 10% per team. The Miami Dolphins did the same thing, allowing private equity. So part of that ownership includes private equity, Steve. And so you and I both know that number is probably bound to increase. And I know the NFL wanted to stay away from private equity, but that time has come.
Xavier, I get accused of being a LeBron stan. I find ways to bring him into conversations people say he doesn't belong in. But I got to think, in this case, you might agree, does he not get enough credit for his business savvy, the way he's empowered players, the way he's made it so players, you know, especially in the NBA, pretty much control that kind of thing. And just the way he, you know, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he owns an NBA team eventually. A lot of these players now are very business oriented. Does he not get enough credit for that?
I think he does get a lot of credit for that, but he wasn't the first guy to do that. Michael Jordan was at the forefront of that. I think Magic Johnson also before him. So those were guys that were really on the forefront of ownership outside the game of sports. And Michael Jordan being the first Vernon athlete to own a professional team in the team in Charlotte. So I think that LeBron James didn't do that. He wasn't the first to get to that party, but it's his goal to do that. He's obviously probably going to do that once his playing career is over. And it's not going to be limited to the NBA, probably NFL, probably some sort of soccer where he has interest in it. I mean, he's even turned his show, The Shop, into a brand of men's a beard care line. And so LeBron James definitely gets props for that, but he definitely wasn't the first to get there.
Xavier Pope, I'm a Cofield and Company, as he is every Thursday. So, all right, we're affected by this NBA Cup semis and eventually the final, but let's go back a step. Steve Kerr just lighting up an NBA official and just officiating in general. This is all around the end of that Warriors and Rockets game. Give me your thoughts on this one.
Yeah, I mean, the ref that made that call wasn't even close to where it happened. And it was a scrum on the floor after Steve Curry missed the three-point shot with the Warriors that were up by one at the time. And then there was a foul called, and then the Warriors didn't have any more fouls left. And so the Rockets were down to shoot the ball, and they went up and won the game. That play is not a call that you call fouls on. And anyone with two eyes could have seen that impacted the outcome of that game. Now, whether that matters later on in the season, who knows? But I just think that they needed to pull that whistle and be smarter about how they called the game. I thought the ref that made that call should ref another game in the NBA, because it was an egregious call that cost the Warriors a chance of the semis coming to Vegas to play for the NBA Cup.
And let's explain the call. It's a scrum on the floor for a loose ball. It's pretty much locked up, and the whole, you know, the fight has finished, and they call a foul on Johnny Kuminga. And I watched it back a bunch of times. I'm like, that's kind of your average scrum on the floor. What are we doing here?
Yeah, and that's the same thing. See, I watched it a bunch of times. I'm like, what? This is typical. You call a jump ball. That's what should have happened. And you go on and see play out the rest of the game, and that's an easy call for a ref to make, though, Steve. Not calling a foul on the Warriors is ridiculous.
EP is with us on Cofield and Company. Salerno's here. I am Steve Cofield. We're live at Circa. So I have some interest because it is Vegas. It is good for Vegas. NBA branding in Vegas is good for us for the future. This is really interesting. I know you were paying attention to the poor Knicks, who again. Las Vegas and ticket sellers wanted the Knicks here. My God, Trae Young is just a giant pain in the ass, isn't he?
Yeah, it seems like Trae Young only is, like, he's like Santa Claus. He reappears once a year to torment the Knicks around Christmas time. And mind you though, Trae Young like has a 6-15 record or something like that against the Knicks. So he doesn't have a winning record against the Knicks. But that's important. But when it's the big stage, it seems like he seems to shine in Madison Square Garden, and he seems to love taunting them. When the fans boo him, he says, "Boo, take your ass home." I mean, that was such a hilarious display. And Trae Young rolling the dice on the Knicks logo. You love to see it coming to Vegas.
Talking to Xavier Pope, Luigi, this guy who assassinated, apparently, allegedly, a healthcare CEO. I know you have a take on this, and I kind of agree with you that maybe if he wasn't a great-looking Italian kid with abs, he wouldn't be getting celebrated as much.
Yeah, it looks like he got a power-up like the Mario game, from people cheering him on for killing a guy. But I think if he looked a little bit differently, if he was an immigrant, he definitely would have been. The conversation around him would have been different. He was black. Definitely would have been the conversation around him would have been different. If he was Muslim, most certainly it would have looked at some sort of act of terrorism. And so I think that the identity of him, it speaks to how the violence of people who look like him is celebrated in our country and being rewarded.
It's kind of funny to me too, because the same people that were on this Kyle Rittenhouse guy's side or whatever during that whole thing now are going the other way. It's like people just can't make up their minds who when it's okay to be a horrible person and when it is, I guess.
I think their minds are pretty much made up. Is a certain group of people thinks that any level of lawlessness is okay as long as it looks at a certain complexion. And that's what we are seeing right now in our society. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, we've got this weird modern-day Robin Hood thing with certain people going Charles Bronson, and while I love Death Wish, those some of my favorite movies, it was a movie. So, this guy acting like Bernie Getz and this guy Danny Penny, and then being held up as some sort of heroes, we're getting a little sick on this.
Yeah, I mean, that's that Danny Penny. I mean, the guy who choked out the black guy in the subway. You have the Jan Sixers are potentially going to get pardoned. And none of those activities to me, if the kind of complexions were look different, I think the society would look at them a little bit different. I don't think they would look at a Robin Hood. They'd look at them being very hood instead.
By the way, for everyone, I'd like to mention this one. For everyone who's white-knuckling right now in the car, like all completely angry and sweating, Steve Kim's back on Monday. So we'll do the same topic with Steve, and we'll see what Steve has to say and if you get all worked up over Steve. Jamie Foxx is back. There's a lot of mystery shrouded around Jamie Foxx. He's got this new Netflix special. You saw this? What did you think?
It was incredible. I mean, it was like a variety show. Very honest, very open. I cried. I praised. I laughed. It was a strong recommend for anyone to watch. He talked about having a stroke. I mean, that was the quote-unquote mystery illness, but he talked about why it was shielded from the public because he had a sister that didn't want the public to see him in the state that he was in. And he talked a lot about his daughter, her talent. She played guitar and he sang. He talked about having a second chance at life and how he had to go through the rehab and coming back on the other side of it. It's a really inspirational set of content to watch on Netflix. I strongly recommend anyone to watch it to see how vulnerable he showed himself to be in his really life-paralleling situation.
That was a wild time with the, I'll put it in quotes, reporting. Content creators have kind of changed everything. And are you seeing another case here where people have to be really careful on who they trust for news delivery in the case of Randy Moss?
Yeah, I mean, Steve, glad great segue from Fox to Randy Moss. We had a lot of people are saying that Jamie Foxx is a clone of him out, and then people are saying that Randy talking about Randy Moss and his liver cancer, and some of the people were talking about where they got it from, and I think that people are they want so much attention on social media, but this is this guy's health condition. He stepped away from the broadcast to be able to take care of his health, but let the guy be able to explain in his words and what's going on with him, like Jamie Foxx did in his special, before he just jumped to conclusion and talk about the condition of the man's health. This is his life he potentially might be fighting for, not about your clicks and likes and shares. And I know traditional media has taken a hit over the last month in terms of how it reports and talks about news, and independent journalism is starting to get a boost up, but we have to be able to be responsible for the content that we share and we talk about on social media. That's it.
Do you think that Jamie Foxx's clone is as funny as the original Jamie Foxx?
I never heard him, I have to figure out.
Well, there's a body double. He died.
No, there's this conspiracy theory going on. Like his tattoo's gone. I'm like, dude, it was a temporary tattoo on the back of his head for a movie. People are saying that he's.
Speaking of Netflix, strongly recommend watching Who Cloned Tyrone. By the way, that's a great film. Speaking of cloning,
I gotta check that out. What's it about? What is it?
It's a really story about this guy who essentially doesn't know he's a clone, but he gets cloned, and then turns out it's a lot of different clones that are like him in different cities across the country, and a lot of different messages about stereotypes about African-Americans. But it's an incredible story. The guy who played in Star Wars is in it. I can't remember this guy. John Boyega. He did an incredible job as that character. You didn't even know it's him. That's how well he played that character.
By the way, while we're at this, I will highly recommend, I don't know if you've seen it yet, on Netflix, The Madness. It's very interesting. It stars a guy named Coleman Domingo, who is a little bit of a clone like you. There's a little clone there with Xavier. I think Xavier's a little clone.
Well, okay. Xavier Coleman Domingo. Okay, I'm here for it.
Look up Coleman Domingo, and his character is Muncie Daniels, and I won't give you more, but you should watch Madness.
I will.
All right, let's close on this. We got a couple things. Boy, oh boy. You know, the reason that the Chuck Show with Shaq and Kenny and Ernie is so good is there's moments on the show where they are fearless. Did Jay-Z get mentioned, and you just hear laughter all over the set?
Yeah, I mean, there was some reference to Jay-Z on the set, and then Charles Bronson says maybe we don't want to talk about that, and then just Shaq just gets up and just walks. Just his physical, he's just a hilarious physical comedian, and gets up and walks behind the stage. I mean, these guys are able to handle the most serious topics and then turn them into comedy. There's nothing like these guys in sports. It's amazing how they're able to turn even the most almost over the line sensitive topic and make it something that's palatable. They're almost geniuses at it.
Caitlin Clark wins Time Athlete of the Year. Are there some issues here?
I don't think it's just because Caitlin Clark, I mean, she didn't win a championship. She didn't win a national championship. She was a Rookie of the Year in the WNBA, and she did bring attention to that sport. But I think that it was great how she responded, talking about the Cincinnati sport and the being buffered by black women, and then talking about how it was being a hard foul and how that was carried on, and some of the different people who support her are supporting her for the wrong reasons. And I think that my thoughts were, why Shohei Ohtani wasn't Athlete of the Year? I mean, and he went out to the Dodgers, got a bunch of money, went there and won a championship. And 50-50 season, had an incredible season. So that was my thoughts, is that did she really deserve it? Did she win anything? Was it based on how she looked, based on what she's actually done on the court? And I think that that's definitely debatable. And people were jumping on my timeline, speaking of having trolls. I just block and hide the comments. I wouldn't have to go back and forth with these people who have this toxic relationship with her and only follow the sport for some sort of weird white grievance politics.
Xavier, we appreciate your time. Love you, buddy. We'll see you.
Love you guys.
You'll do it eventually.
What?
A little hug. A little verbal hug. The end of that spot.
I said I love you last time, and you got mad, and we're like, ugh.
I think we got on you. No, you can't. By the way, you can't win. You can't win on the show.
I'm like, I love you too. You're like, ugh.
If you do, we're like, what are you doing? You're doing the right way.
That's exactly.
You don't do. We got. We were just talking the other day about how ridiculous the college football world is, that no matter what happens with the smaller brands that people are mad about being in the college football playoff, SMU, Arizona State, and Boise, if they win, people are going to be mad and like, change this playoff, the seating sucks. If they get blown off the field, they don't even deserve to be in, they suck.